You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
I want to break free.
I'm Sam Stone. Welcome to the 49th edition of the Stone Tapes. Joining us this month, we have Robin Pierce, Patricia H. Ash, David J. Howe in the studio.
Hello.
And of course, our producer, Alex Lefchuk.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, I'm delighted to say hello to Thana Nouveau. Hi, Thana. How are you?
Hi, Sam. I'm great.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello. Oh, so
I was busy gesticulating wildly.
But... Yes, because I couldn't hear you. You know, all these things go wrong sometimes.
Oh, technology.
My speakers were, my headset wasn't working. So, Thana, welcome to the show for the first time. Davies would like to have a little chat with you because he's.
I would. I need to talk to you, Thana.
Okay.
I need to talk to you about something very serious and something
very important. In trouble.
You are very much in trouble. Yes, young lady. So for our listener, if you've not heard the name Thana Nouveau, then you're obviously not reading the right collections of horror fiction, and you're obviously not moving in the right circles. Thana is a horror and science fiction writer. You have some story collections out, which include titles such as Octoberland, From Hell to Eternity, and Unquiet Waters. Which might be a book about Roger Waters making a lot of noise after directing a film. But I don't think that's what that's actually about. Or it could be the guy from Pink Floyd making a lot of noise. But I don't think that's what it's about either. And there's a number of novels and award nominations, Thana, and all sorts of stuff. What I want to talk to you about, though, Thana, is a recent novel that I read of yours called... Now, get this for a title, guys.
It's an amazing title.
The House of Frozen Screams, which is probably the most awesome title for a book that I've read in a long, long time.
Oh, wow.
So,
very provocative.
First question then, yeah. So where did that title come from? Did the title come first and then the book? Or was it the book and then the title? Or was it at the same time? Or...
No, well, this book was a long, long time in the works, because, yeah, I've mostly been writing short stories, and it was originally called The Kneading, and the publisher asked me to change it, and I was trying to come up with something more, I don't know, more pulpy, more in your face. Sorry?
Something less bread-based.
The Kneading.
And something more Googleable.
Yeah.
Okay. So the book came first?
So, yeah. Yes, it did.
And then the title was added on.
It was, yeah.
One of the things that stood out for me reading the book is that you have an incredible sense of place and location all the way through. It's one of those novels, sort of, I suppose, the classic Gothic style. And I'm thinking of things like Mervyn Peake and... all of those kind of Titus books and things. Stephen King's The Shining, you know, James Herbert's, a couple of his ones like Secret of Crickley Hall and stuff, where the actual building itself is kind of like one of the lead characters almost in the book. Do these things have a resonance with you?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I definitely wanted the house to be a character. And the place, Clevedon, the whole area is... it's very special to me.
And was it based on anything that actually exists, or was it completely out of your brain?
It sort of was inspired by the rather hellish process of finding a new home, which I'm sure most people can relate to.
Yes.
bit of a follow the House of Usher. You find a lovely old Gothic building with lots of character and lots of history, but you know it's not quite perfect, and then the cracks start to show, and then maybe something worse than cracks start to show.
And it's a fascinating book in that it's got a lot of echoes in it that see, I suspect, knowing your background and knowing it's probably exactly the same as mine in terms of late night BBC Two horror films and loving horror and television and books and that whole genre. I'm trying not to give too much away about the book, so I don't think this gives too much away, that they, at one point, they find something rather nasty kind of hidden in the walls of the book, which is of the house, which kind of threw me back to, do you remember a Nigel Neal chiller series called Beasts?
I know exactly the one you mean.
And you the episode called Baby.
Oh. Yeah.
Now, is that something that was kind of echoing through your brain as you were writing this?
Actually not. That's just a happy coincidence. I found a website many years ago called the Deliberately Concealed Objects Project, where people would deliberately hide things within the walls of houses for good luck or whatever, and some of them were kind of unpleasant that they would wall up. So I don't want to say too much, obviously.
No.
But that's been rattling around in my brain ever since I read that. So.
And that's a real thing.
That's a real thing. I'd never heard of that.
No, that gives me ideas.
It is. Yeah, look up deliberately concealed objects.
I'm gonna do that.
I'll have to Google
that. Yeah.
Have you hidden anything in the walls of your house?
I haven't.
Like your husband, John?
Well, I'm not.
No? You haven't seen or heard of him for a bit, so you know.
He's awfully quiet, isn't he?
He's awfully quiet, yes. Except for that beat of his heart. Badum.
Yeah.
Badum.
Oh, yeah.
The beating of his hideous heart.
So the book...
I'd probably be in trouble with the planning permission if I just started banging holes in in our old Victorian flat.
I think you might, yes.
You might be,
so
yeah.
The book kind of progresses, and it brings in all sorts of fun and games and shenanigans, and there's hauntings and the ghosts of people's past and, you know, ancient mysteries and plots and all sorts of things sort of mixed in together. I mean, what were you trying to achieve with the book? Were you exercising any demons or anything, or was it just having a lot of fun?
Oh, it was a bit of everything. Exercising demons is probably a bit obvious. You can tell I'm not really too fond of babies.
You
might have picked up the subtle hint of that.
Yes.
But I wanted to write something. So I was kind of fantasizing that this would be a film that David Cronenberg would make of
right.
it. So I wanted a haunted house and full-on body horror, and specifically female body horror.
Yes.
And all the horror that comes with the idea of babies and that whole thing.
Because there's some quite brutal scenes in it. I must admit, a few pages I found quite hard to read. Which I find actually unusual. A lot of books don't go the whole way, if you know what I mean. I'm not suggesting everybody should. But certain elements of it were very visceral. And again, I think you've got a very good turn of phrase in the way that you describe these things that kind of brings out that horror element.
Thank you.
Within them. And the book goes off in a very surprising direction as well towards the end, which we won't talk about. you said it had a long gestation, the book. Was that sort of a long time thinking or writing or...?
A bit of everything. Reality gets in the way, real life gets in the way, and it just kept getting shoved on the back burner. And then, you know, shopping around trying to find a publisher, all that. Then
which
the whole
is always difficult.
Process.
That's always
absolutely
a difficult.
You know this.
I do.
You know it, Sam.
I do. One thing that occurs to me, you know, because talking about visceral horror here, and it is still on my to-do list to read the book, and I'm very, very intrigued by it, and the title, and for everything that David said, and all your influences it. But one thing that does occur to me is I think women are actually very, very good at writing visceral horror. What's your take on that, Thona?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's plenty of gruesome stuff by women. And, the psychological, twisted, disturbing, haunting type things. I wouldn't necessarily say, if you showed me a story and I read it, I could say, oh, a woman definitely read that or a man definitely read that.
Right.
But I think, I think probably women are underestimated in their ability to write.
So what's your writing process, Thana? I mean, explain a kind of typical writing day.
Typical writing day. Well, my ideal writing day is to wake up at about 4:30 in the morning, which is my most creative time. The world's kind of mine at that time of day. Nobody's awake, nobody's up. It's kind of got the flat to myself. It's kind of spooky, so it does inspire a lot of dark thoughts. Have some background music, usually film scores.
Nice.
And just type away and hope exciting things happen.
Is there any element in horror that you wouldn't, any area you wouldn't go to? Anything you wouldn't write about?
Oh, wow. Gosh. I'm trying to think of something I wouldn't do. I was just saying the other day, I've never actually written a vampire story because I don't know what I could add
Vampire babies.
Vampire babies, yeah.
But that's not to say I wouldn't. Cruelty to animals, I wouldn't. I can't even read it. I have to skip over it, and that's one thing I really can't read.
I mean, there are some things. I don't like child abuse things myself. That's one
thing.
No, I can't go there, really.
Mm. So you wouldn't write cruelty to animals?
No, I think that would just be too upset. I mean, I have had horrible things happen to animals in stories. But,
I was just going to say, even hedgehogs.
Yeah, it's not fun to write. I don't like doing that at all. I wouldn't like center a story around it. I wouldn't like to do some really grim kind of urban, Ken Loach type drama sort of thing. That wouldn't be any fun for me.
Wow. No, I don't think I'd
enjoy that either. What have you got coming up then, Thana? Is there another novel in the wings?
Well, I'm kind of tinkering with a couple of science fiction novels at the moment.
Cool.
Cool. But right now I'm working on a non-fiction project. So that's my next thing.
Wow.
Wow. Can you tell us anything about that or not at the moment?
Yeah, yeah. It's there's a series called Midnight Monographs. Is that the name? We're focusing on different horror films, underrated horror films, and I'm writing about The Descent, which is one of my very favourite horror films.
Oh, fantastic. We'll look forward
to
seeing that.
That's a film that Sam finds very hard to watch
because
she's very claustrophobic.
There's
elements of that film, and I must admit, I even find hard to watch. Yeah. It's not the horror bits, it's the bits where they're squeezing their way through
the tunnels.
It's horrible.
It's the stuff of nightmares to me. It's just awful. Although I wouldn't be afraid to write about it because you do exercise your fears and phobias, don't you, in work writing. So
absolutely. Well, it's fun. It's a fun challenge to sort of take something like that because I'm not claustrophobic. I find tight spaces, except for other people, like crushed bodies, I'd be freaked out by. But if I was in a tight space, I'd find it quite comforting. So I like to take something like that and make it scary for me.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Is there anything in particular that you've written about that you were phobic about and you feel better about now you've written about it?
Oh, yeah. Well, a couple scenes in House of Frozen Screams for sure.
I used to not like zombies. And then as soon as I started writing about zombies, I thought they were really cool then. I could watch zombie movies again, and I was really scared of them. Yeah, I was terrified because I saw when I was 16, zombie flesh eaters put me off forever. Have you had any films that have ever put you off a certain thing in horror or not?
Yeah.
Or are you just sort of open to it all?
I can't watch Ken Russell's The Devils. I saw that at far too young an age, and the whole Spanish Inquisition torture thing that, you know, thinking this actually happened to people.
Oh, yeah.
And I can't separate that when I'm watching it. And, Oliver Reed is so, he's so good. He's so believable in everything that happens. It's just, you actually feel it with him, and it's too much for me.
Yeah, I get that. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Thorne.
Oh, that's brilliant, Thorne. No, I'm absolutely, it's a pleasure to talk to you, Thana. And we've been talking about The House of Frozen Screams by Thana Niveau, which is Niveau.
Go and buy it.
With its Sinbad and other details, I'll spin you half a story each night. I won't bow before your rage and might. I'm a storyteller, spreading words. Prison dweller.
Hello, and that was The Storyteller by Lindsay Gold. Thank you so much to Thana Niveau. Great interview. Really enjoyed speaking to that lovely lady. And now we have joining us Patricia, and we're going over to Patricia's Corner. Hello, Patricia H. Ash.
Hello, Sam.
So am I supposed to say here, nobody puts Patricia in the corner?
Oh, no. Do you get that reference, Patricia?
I do. I like corners, though.
So that's fine,
then. Keep it back to the wall and see everything.
There you go.
Oh. So, Patricia, what have you been reading or playing? What have you been doing, and what are you going to review for us today?
Reading.
You've been reading, great.
Yes. Lots. Signed up for Kindle Unlimited.
Oh, great.
Well, I've read so many books now. I'm going to tell you guys about a graphic novel called Moonshine.
Okay. Was that on Kindle Unlimited as well?
Probably not.
Oh, right. I was just saying.
in a comic book shelf and went, ooh, this looks interesting. 1920s, American Prohibition, rural Appalachia, werewolves.
Oh.
Fantastic.
Wow, sounds great. So give us a summary of what the story is about. Give us a little bit of a summary.
Well, the big mob boss in New York sends a guy, just a random dude, random mobster guy, to a town in West Virginia somewhere probably. Because there's a somebody who's making really delicious booze, and they want to corner the market, do a deal.
Hence moonshine.
And, yeah, and also werewolves.
Moonshine, yes.
Yeah, it works on two or three levels. It's really great. It is dark. It's very much horror. Quite graphic in places, so not for children.
Right.
But highly recommended.
So what would you give that out of 10?
Oh, 9 out of 10.
Wow, that's a recommendation.
10 out of 10.
So is this like a full-size graphic novel, sort of based on comic books originally, or is it original?
Yeah, it's from Image Comics.
All right.
I don't know how many issues there are. There are two volumes of the graphic novel.
Right.
So far.
And who's the writer and main artist on it?
Brian Azzarello is the writer, I believe, and Eduardo Risso is the artist.
Ah.
And dang, the art is really good. It is creepy and it is frightening. And wow, the werewolves are really scary werewolves.
It sounds like it really lends itself to the graphic novel format.
Oh, it does.
Could you see this in a film one day, Moonshine? It's Moonshine it is, isn't it?
Moonshine,
is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Ooh, that would be really good. There'd be period costumes, just vintage suits and stuff, and then werewolves. It would be a great horror movie.
I like the title as well.
Really great.
Because moonshine, obviously, it's got two connotations hasn't it?
Yeah. Where were you?
No, I don't know. Maybe. I'm sorry. I'm very tired today.
Bless you.
But I do love it. I think it's a great title. So what attracted you to reading it? I know you said you picked it up and you loved it. What was it about it that you really stood out to you initially?
Let's see. I think it was the cover. I judged a book by its cover. And I was like, ooh, moonshine. That sounds interesting. And I read the summary and went, well, I need to read that.
Mm.
Wow. Sounds good.
That's really good. Are we going to talk series now?
We are.
Are we going to talk series?
We are going to talk series. We are.
Is there any good werewolf series?
Yeah. Have you seen? Oh, actually, there is one called Bitten.
Bitten.
Have you seen Bitten?
Oh, yeah.
Patricia.
I think I've seen about one episode of it. I did read a couple of the series of novels it's based on.
Yes, it's Kelly Armstrong, isn't it? Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
I think I read a couple of the bit novels when they first came out. I thought they were fairly decent.
I think it
went. Kelly's a really good author.
Yeah, she's a very good writer. She really is. And it went to, I think, 4 seasons. Am I right on that? Was it 3? Can't quite remember.
Oh.
But it's
that did quite well for itself then.
It's on Netflix, and I watched it last year. Absolutely loved it. I didn't think it was going to be my cup of tea, actually, but I mean, who doesn't like werewolves? Let's be honest.
Oh, werewolves are amazing. And
if it's done differently.
I mean, I'm obviously thinking synchronicity here. We had Thana Nouveau telling us she's working on a monologue book thing on The Descent, of course, which is a Neil Marshall film. And, of course, Neil Marshall made Dog Soldiers.
Before yes, which is a great film.
Which is one of the greatest werewolf films.
Classic. It's become a classic, I think.
That's really, really good. I'm not sure there's that many werewolf series, though. I'm just thinking, can you think of any, Alex?
Teen Wolf.
Yes,
you've got the young adult route.
Teen Wolf. Have you seen that one, then? You said, Patricia, did you see that?
Yes, I did see that one. It's like young adult teenage literature just on a screen.
Yeah.
With very angsty.
And a guilty pleasure.
Extremely
athletic. a guilty pleasure, which I'd also add, which I found myself addicted to, even though the acting is so wooden it's unbelievable, The Mortal Instruments.
Oh, yes. Oh. I agree with you, yeah.
Oh.
It is a bit wooden, it to is, say the least.
But, you know, you got your vampires, you got your werewolves, you got your New York City, you got your magic people, and you got acting, which is almost as though it's by the numbers.
It is, but it's nicely shot.
Exactly.
Though. It is actually
very nicely,
nicely
shot.
Shot.
But Catherine McNamara, she looks good, but honestly,
she's
working her way through her sort of acting class on screen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't disagree with any of that. That's great, Alex. Dear. This is what happens when we give Alex a microphone.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, I must admit, I don't tend to watch the young adult stuff. That's why I was kind of blissfully unaware. It sounds like probably thankfully unaware.
No, I do, but certain things, like I've been, obviously we're on Let's Talk Series at the moment, so one of the things that, again, has been a real guilty pleasure for me recently is I've just saw season 1 of Big Little Lies. With Nicole Kidman, Shailene, or what's her second name? I've forgotten it again. But it's Reese Witherspoon, all sorts of amazing talent like Laura Dern, and of course the absolutely sublime Alexander Skarsgård.
Oh, your favourite?
Yes, who is. And I just absolutely addicted to watching the show. And the season 2 started. And I've also been, I picked up as a result because people were commenting on my Facebook, because I often go, well, like, this is what I'm watching. And other people go, oh, have you seen this? Have you seen that? Which is why I ended up also looking at Riverdale, which is angsty.
Oh, yes, I've seen the first season of that.
Yeah, it's good, isn't
good.
It? I'm actually really
it's
enjoying
not at all
it.
Like the Archie comics. But it
no,
is
that's
really,
right.
Really good.
That's right. My daughter was
like
actually telling me that it was based on the Archie comics because I didn't know that. So she knew it, which was great.
Which is where Sabrina comes from.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
Archie comics.
Yeah, and so Riverdale itself is again, it's a thriller, but it's teeny, but very interesting. Really well performed. Well, very well shot. Some beautiful shots in it.
Oh yeah.
So again, another little guilty pleasure of watching. I'm really into thriller watching at the moment.
Whereas on the other hand, I'm really, really enjoying Good Omens.
Oh, that is so good.
Oh my goodness, that was amazing.
That is awesome. And David Tennant and Michael Sheen just knock it out of the park. I think they are so good in it.
The chemistry between them is
absolutely amazing.
I know. And they're both incredibly good actors, and it's incredibly well-nuanced performances. And it's such a great, detailed, beautiful series. I'm just so enjoying it. And I think the plotting's good. I think Neil Gaiman's done an amazing job of scripting it all and developing it from the book. I'm just so impressed with it.
I mean, it's great.
One of the best things I've seen for a long time. Very, very enjoyable.
Actually,
really enjoyable.
After the show, we must go and watch another episode.
We might watch another episode.
It is very good.
I think we're about 4 in or 3 in or something. I can't remember. But really enjoying it.
Oh, well, thanks so much, Patricia. And we'll catch up with you again next time. And for right now, who wants to live forever?
There's no time for us. There's no place for us. What is this thing? Our dreams yet slips.
no chance for us.
This is Chase Masterson, founder of the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, the first ever organization to make a stand against bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBT bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of hate using pop culture stories that we love. We all love superheroes. Why not be one? Check out our website at www.popcultureherocoalition.org. Follow us on Facebook at Pop Culture Hero Coalition and on Twitter at @SuperheroIRL. Thanks so much. This is Chase Masterson, and you're listening to Sam Stone and Friends with the Stone Tapes on Siren FM.
And I'm sure sure you recognise a bit of that music from Good Omens, great new show that we're all watching at the moment. And joining us now on the telephone, and all the way from Wales, is Robin Pearce. Hi, Robin.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, we're good, thank you. How are you?
Very well,
We always get a lot of good omens from Wales, don't we?
Yeah, we always get a good lots of good omens from there.
Yeah.
Well, sending positive vibes your way, guys.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you.
So, Robin, what's the view from your castle this week? What are you going to be reviewing for us?
I've seen a marvellous movie called Brightburn.
Ooh.
Have you heard of Brightburn?
No.
I heard of a film called Bright, which was Will Smith.
No, not that Netflix monstrosity. No. This is Brightburn, an anti-superhero thing.
Oh, okay. Okay, all right. No, well, you know.
Okay, can David go and stand in a corner and have me hang his head in shame?
Shame.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, he's doing it. We're going to get you a dunce hat.
As you know, or you may have realised over the 49 months we've been doing the show, I have a thing for superhero movies.
No, really? I really hadn't guessed.
I do like comic books.
Oh, I'm so subtle about it. You know, it's not like I'm wearing a Superman shirt right now or Aquaman underwear, but you don't need to know about that. Brightburn. I didn't know what I was going to see when I saw the trailer for this one. It's it's more or less a Gunn family project. You may remember the director of Super, which you may have seen or may not have seen, but you'll certainly have seen Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, we have, yes.
And the Gunn family, the brothers, Guardians of the Galaxy director James Gunn is a producer, one of his two brothers have written the script. And it's like one of those what-if stories that DC used to run. They might still do, I don't know. And it starts off very, very familiar territory. It's a farm in Kansas. And one night, a spaceship makes a crash landing in one of their fields. And it's a loving, doting, though childless couple who run the farm, and inside the spaceship they find a little baby infant.
Oh, right. So it sounds a little bit like...
So it's a bit like Men in Black Superman. Crossed with Superman.
Mm.
No Men in Black here, pure Superman.
Right, okay. Right.
And they decide to adopt the child as their own. But they also decide to maybe keep the fact that he came from outer space from him. And spaceship... In a basement area of the barn, which is locked up. The child grows up, has a wonderful Norman Rockwell-esque childhood. And it's all very sort of like 1950s and 60s, you know, Superboy kind of thing.
Yeah.
And when he starts hitting puberty, not the easiest of stages in a young man's life, I expect to be hitting mine any day now. He notices a red light pulsating from the barn, and there's something calling to him, and it is, of course, the spaceship. It's a lot like the similar scene in the 1979 Superman film, where he's called to the barn, and he realizes, you know, he sees the green crystal, and of course, this time it's red, and there is something otherworldly about him. He starts developing powers, and he can't explain this. His parents think he's just going through puberty. He starts to notice girls. He starts having temperamental mood swings, and this is when it takes a sinister turn. As the Superboy we know and loved, you know, he would have his adventures with Crypto the Superdog and... be doing good deeds. We all know kids don't really have self-control.
Mm.
And so when he notices a girl in school who seems to give him the eye, or so he thinks, he takes his attentions far too far.
Oh, dear.
How do you control a little kid who's, you know, about 12, 13, who has super strength, who has heat vision, who can fly, who has super speed.
Mm.
You can't chastise him. So if he takes offence at anything or thinks that he's been wronged, as so many teens and preteens do, it has very, very serious consequences for the person who he thinks has wronged him.
Wow.
And, of course, the poor, hapless parents can't really control him, yet they want to protect him. It's, I guess, the first superhero horror movie. Now, I would have thought superhero horror movie, it's going to be Ghost Rider or Venom or Spawn or something like that. But this, some of the gore effects in this film are really hard to watch.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
You know, somebody will get a glass shard in the eye. Somebody will have their jaw so severely dislocated, it's basically hanging by tendrils of skin.
Oh, gosh.
It's really hard to watch sometimes. But it's a film that is completely absorbing. And I really hope that it does well at the box office because, as we all know, the summer season has all these studios push their tentpole movies out, and they're all eager for a share of the audience's attention span and contents of their wallets. And smaller films like this get lost in the shuffle. This and, I believe, Ma, which I watched a few weeks ago, also a great, great horror movie, which I can't recommend highly enough, may get lost in the shuffle, but hopefully word of mouth and a home video release and streaming will work their magic and these films will get the attention they so richly deserve.
Wow.
And both films really poke in the eye of Conjuring and La Llorona and all that nonsense.
It sounds incredible. It sounds actually quite terrifying because you were looking at Superman there, if he was psychotic, really, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
what if Superman had been a juvenile delinquent with no self-control whatsoever, and whatever he wants, he will just take, and nobody can challenge him?
It's, as you've been speaking, Robin, it's reminding me slightly of that old Billy Mooney episode of The Twilight Zone.
That's right.
Me too. That's right. I'll send you into the fourth field.
I can't remember the title of it, though. Alex probably knows.
It's a Good Life.
It's a Good Life.
It was where the child had ability to, and he silenced his parents, and
that's
the mammals disappeared.
And it was remade by Joe Dante in Twilight Zone, the movie.
Yes.
Right, yes. Yes, it reminded me of that as well, I think, that one.
Brilliant.
Remember the corn row?
David, can I ask you a question?
Yes, you may.
Did you ever see an episode of the Twilight Zone called Four Characters in Search of an Exit?
Five
characters in Search of an Exit.
It doesn't immediately spring to mind. I'm sure I must have seen it.
You missed nothing, pal.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Let's not fight. Let's keep the Kent family theme going with Stacey Kent and in Brightburn, What the World Needs Now.
Yeah.
Just too little of what the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, oh, but just one,
Stacey's in a way. So what the world needs now, great song, a bit chilled out.
Oh,
maybe we needed
out.
That after Brightburn.
I'm a bit horizontal after that. How are you feeling, Robin? Are you well chilled?
Well chilled, thank you. Who was that singing? Was that Chase Masterson?
No,
it wasn't.
Stacey Kent.
Clark's sister, apparently.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
I know.
So, Robin, we are now going to
have
a talk.
We're going to talk about a film now.
We are.
A film. So, if I was to suggest to you, our listener, and to Sam and Alex and Robin, that we were going to watch a film, a horror film, and that in this film's cast, we had Chris Sarandon, Martin Balsam, John Carradine, Jose Ferrer, Ava Gardner, Burgess Meredith, Eli Wallach, Christopher Walken, Beverly D'Angelo, Nana Visitor, and Jeff Goldblum.
You'd never have.
Wouldn't you go, oh my goodness me, that's got to be the best film ever. What a
cast. Well, no, because you haven't said anything about Christina Raines.
Christina Raines is in it as well. I missed a
Absolutely.
Few out.
Yeah.
Yes, Arthur Kennedy I missed out. I missed out Hank Garrett, Tom Berenger. I mentioned Chris Walken.
Sylvia Miles, Deborah Raffin.
Absolutely. Whoa. It's absolutely an amazing cast. And the film I'm talking about is a film called The Sentinel. Now, I don't know whether listeners will necessarily have even heard of The Sentinel. Way back when I was a knee-high to a stripling, there was a novel called The Sentinel came out by a gentleman called Geoffrey Convitz. And I bought this novel. It was out in paperback, and I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a tremendous novel. And then Geoffrey Convitz wrote a sequel called The Apocalypse, which was even better. Absolutely loved them. And I actually remember when The Sentinel came out in the cinemas, because it was roundly criticised by the critics and everything, you know, because it was quite horrific. And quite
nothing like
nasty.
The Arthur C. Clarke short story.
Nothing at all. Or
the big characters in the X-Men.
No, exactly. No. Nothing like that at all. It's directed by a young gentleman called Michael Winner, and it's an absolutely fascinating film. Winner claims there's a little prologue thing by Michael Winner on the DVD version we've got, that he claims he wrote this film in about a week. He, like, knocked it off because they came to us and, would you like to do a horror film? He's like, oh, darling, darling.
Michael Winner, he would have ripped it off.
Yes. Me? I'm doing adverts now. No, and he apparently wrote this film in a week, and they made it, and I absolutely love it. The basic idea of it is that Christina Rains plays a character called Alison, who's a fashion model, but she's a bit neurotic and a bit all over the place and not quite knows what's going on. And she's got a kind of like a husband who doesn't want to, or a fiancé who doesn't want to spend much time with her. So he's got his own apartment, and I think she wants her own space, so she wants her own apartment kind of thing. I suppose an American sort of thing, maybe, I don't know. So she rents this amazing brownstone house in Brooklyn, which has a strange occupant on the top floor of a Father Halloran, who just sits looking out of his window all day long and doesn't do anything else, a blind priest. And as the film progresses, Alison starts to have sort of strange fainting fits, and she meets the people who live in her house, in particular Burgess Meredith, as Charles Chazen, who makes an unforgettable first appearance with a cat and a budgerigar. he's an amazing character, amazing actor Burgess Meredith. And all of these neighbours are a bit weird, a bit strange, a bit kind of peculiar and not quite what you expect. And the film kind of trundles along with poor Alison getting worse and worse and worse and not quite knowing what's going on. The Catholic Church is all involved in this. There's kind of scenes with priests running hither and thither and some sort of plot and thing unfolding, but you don't really know what's going on until right at the very end of the film. And the last kind of act, I suppose, as you might say it, is where the whole thing all comes together. And you have this amazing scene of Christina Rains sort of running up through her apartment block, seeing like horrors from hell and deformed people and snakes and rats and blood and gore and goodness knows what, all kind of commanded.
Also her father.
And her father.
Her dead father
came back from the grave.
Yeah.
All sort of commanded by Burgess Meredith as sort of like, I suppose, the devil's representative or something. Mm. All kind of trying to get her to kill herself, basically. They do not want her to fulfill her destiny at the end of the film. And it's an amazing film. I actually really, really like it. We've seen it three or four times, I think, now, haven't we?
Yeah, lots.
It's got something about it. It's not really like any other sort of horror film of the genre, I suppose, or of that period. It's got a certain atmosphere, a certain je ne sais quoi about
je
it.
Je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, that's the one. Which sort of sets it apart. The performances are all tremendous. I don't think there's a bit of duff casting in it. Although Christopher Walken's a bit strange. He plays a detective. I don't think he speaks in the entire film.
Channeling Charles Bronson, obviously.
Yes,
channeling Charles Bronson, yeah. I mean, what was your feelings on it, Robin? You must have seen it.
Of course. I saw it when it first came out. Just at the tail end of that sort of whole possession, devil stuff that started off with The Exorcist and carried on with The Omen and those. And I remember I became aware of it through the House of Hammer magazine that predated Starburst, which I've heard of. And I went to see it, and it was one of those unnerving films because, unlike a vampire movie or a werewolf movie, you don't know what the rules are.
Yes.
And I remember reading in House of Hammer that a lot of the apparitions that you see coming through the portals of hell at the end were actually deformed people.
They were actually real deformed
that's
people.
Correct.
I think that's where the big controversy—that's where the big controversy with the film was, because people criticised Winner for actually using these deformed people. I tend to take
a true exploitation film, I guess.
I suppose exploitation, but I tend to take the view that
it was very classy, you know, though, wasn't it? And Christina Rains was so magnificent in it.
Oh yes.
You know, she quit acting at practically the height of her career to become a nurse.
Really?
Wow.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
Wow.
That's what she's doing now.
That's amazing.
She went on to one of those American soaps in the 80s, Flamingo Road. I think it ran a couple of seasons, but I remember the second one was kind of more horror orientated because it had something to do with voodoo in it, but I don't really remember more than that.
No idea.
But it was like Dallas with swamps.
I think that's it.
The music has kicked in.
We're finished for the show of this.
We've overrun again.
Number 49 is finished.
We've talked too much.
So we'll see you next month.
For the 50th.
I think there's got to be cake.
Having a celebration.
And so thanks so much to Robin Pearce.
Thank you.
Patricia H. Ash. Alex Lefchuk, David J.
Thank
Howell.
Thank you.
Our phoning guest, Tharna Nivo. Until next time, I'm Sam Stone.
That's my name. And do I dream again? For now I find the fountain of the opera is there inside my mind. Hi!